Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome into another season of the Underdog Dynasty Sunbelt Podcast. My name is Matt Miguez. I'm the Louisiana writer for Underdog Dynasty. This is my third season covering Louisiana for Underdog, and it is my second season as a podcast host for Underdog as well. I am joined by my co-host for another year, Mr. Brian Stone. Stone, what's going on, man?
Not much. It feels like it's been a very long off season. I mean, it always feels like that, but I don't know. There was something about this year. Maybe it was the world reopening that just made it feel like it's just so much longer than off seasons in the past. I feel like time has blown by in the past, and this year it's been like a real grind even to get to July.
Yeah. You know, the season last year seemed, you know, you talked about the off season being a slow grind this year. The season last year felt like it went by in a blink, even faster than normal.
The crazy thing. I mean, it was one of the craziest years in college football. I mean, you never knew if a game was going to take place.
Right. Like, we know that all too well.
You would tune into College Game Day and there would be a breaking news banner on the bottom line that says a game had been canceled like 30 minutes before it was set to begin. So you had no idea like what was going to happen, who was going to play, which players were just going to all of a sudden like quietly be like pushed out of the way and be like, right. Oh, they actually tested positive like 10 minutes before game time. This team doesn't have any quarterbacks now or, you know, whatever. So,
That's like us in the conference championship game last year. We were in Myrtle Beach.
Yeah.
Our players were sitting at dinner when they got the call that they weren't going to play.
We
know that feeling all too well down here in South Louisiana.
Well, I mean, you know, I hate to always relate everything back to my team, but like I told you before we started recording, like the way that some of the media like around Statesboro handles Georgia Southern information is like trying to extract information from the FBI, like for yourself. So like game one, nobody knew until kickoff that we had like 24 players out with COVID.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it was just like you cut on ESPN Plus.
Like, oh, like, hey, by the way.
Yeah.
Right.
Kickoffs around the corner. Oh, by the way, a third of Georgia Southern's team just got COVID tested positive and they're all out. So we don't know who's going to play yet. And it's like, what? That's, I don't think that's ever happened in college football history, maybe.
Right. Like, yeah, no, definitely a wild year. Yeah. As much as I think that this year is going to be a huge step in the right direction, don't be surprised. I don't think games are going to get canceled, but I mean, players that didn't get vaccinated could end up having to sit games. You never know.
I mean, you never know, like, because no one's required to like disclose their status.
Of course.
I mean, you know, there are NFL players that are like keeping this information. I mean, imagine there's so many college players to keep up with that. It's like, you never know. You just don't. But then like there are NFL players that are keeping this information under lock and key. So you like, you're like, is my running back all of a sudden going to test positive and be like, actually guys, didn't get vaccinated yet. Yeah. So I'm just
going to fantasy football is going to be interesting this year, man. Yeah. And for our listeners who don't know this, Brian and I are in a league together and he's going to get his ass kicked this year.
We'll see.
Well, tonight we're going to start season previews and we begin with one of the Sun Belt Conference co-champions, the real champion, the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. You know, 10-1 last year, their only blemish coming at home against Coastal Carolina by 3 on a last second field goal. And what a lot of people don't realize about that game is you take that into consideration. We talked about the COVID pandemic. The Cajuns were missing 9 starters that night. which is a situation that a lot of teams were in last year. I'm not using that as an excuse, but it's something to consider that your only hiccup is when you were missing a third of your starters, you know, kind of a what could have been situation. But since I'm the Louisiana aficionado of the underdog writers, we're going to do this in a question and answer kind of format. Brian's going to pose questions for me. I'm going to answer them the best way I can, give you guys the most information we can possibly give you. And we'll do that for most of the teams in the conference. And we'll have some fun over the next 2 months.
So I just want to start off. I guess for you, it would be a lukewarm take, but I think for a lot of our listeners, this would be a hot take. I think if you guys and Coastal play in the conference title game last year and it actually happens, I think you guys win.
Absolutely.
Because it just felt like Coastal, it was weird. As soon as they won that BYU game, it felt like that was the peak of their season. Like, you know, you can take whatever you want away from it. You know, BYU, it was a good win. I think they were ranked 13th or something around there at the time. Yep. But then they played Troy the next week.
And Troy nearly ran away with it.
Yeah, and they win by 4. And then they play Liberty in the bowl game. And I just remember watching that game going, this isn't the same Coastal right. team that I've been watching like all year. And then, you know, Liberty ends up, you know, upsetting them by 3 in overtime. And it just felt like they had peaked, like with yep. the BYU win. They beat a ranked team with, I believe, College Game Day was in town.
Oh, yeah. It was a huge deal.
Yeah, it was the biggest win in school history. Beat the guy that ended up being the number 2 overall pick in this year's draft. I mean, it was like you yep. couldn't have asked for more. And then from there, it just felt like it was like a slow decline. And I feel like if they play, like I said, you guys in the title game, I feel like you guys probably beat them, and then they limp their way into that whatever bowl game, and I guess still play Liberty. I don't know how that would have worked out, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about it. You know, I'm a biased fan, because what fan isn't biased, right? But I'm also, as an aspiring journalist, I also know when I need to be impartial and, you know, look at the facts from both sides. No question about it, we would have won that game against Coastal Carolina. We had just beaten App State for the first time in program history. We were riding a 7-game win streak. I mean, we were absolutely clicking on all cylinders at that moment in time. And like you said, it seemed like Coastal kind of peaked after that BYU game. And yeah, you know, I think they were a little too cocky after the way they were able to beat us. And I don't know, man. I think we would have gone to Myrtle Beach and taken care of business pretty handedly, actually.
I mean, this is all, you know, conjecture or whatever. I don't know.
Hey, hindsight's 20/20.
It's also tough to kind of gauge what that BYU team actually was, right? Because it's like,
who'd they play?
That was a thing that wasn't their fault. They had, before the season started, once COVID hit, you know, they're an independent.
Yeah, they lost all their games
out. Yeah, and they couldn't do any. I mean, they were scrambling. I remember they were scrambling to put together a schedule like on the fly. Like I remember that Coastal BYU game got scheduled like 3 weeks out or something, like 2 weeks out or something like that from yeah. that game. So it was like everything last year was just thrown together like on the fly for them specifically, because they don't have a conference. So it's just like, whoever wants to play, it was like an open challenge to like any team that wanted to come play that had an opening. And well, then it was like all the P5 teams had nothing to gain by playing them. So they were all like, no, right. We're good.
You know, I remember one story from the Coastal BYU game. They talked about it on that College Game Day episode that morning. The equipment team for BYU, they were told Tuesday night that week, the game hadn't been booked yet. They were told it was either Monday or Tuesday night that week to start driving to Myrtle Beach. And they were like, yep. but there's no game yet. And they said, well, drive there anyway. Hopefully there's a game when you get there.
And so, you know, they got lucky and there was a game to play when they got there. But that just kind of sums up the year last year.
Yeah. Like I said, I mean, maybe some college football historian can look back and be like, well, 100 years ago during the Spanish flu, this happened. And it's like, okay. But in recent history, right, it had to be the craziest.
Absolutely.
There had, to my knowledge, never been a season where there were teams scheduling other teams 2 weeks out from the game, like you said, and being like, I think Houston scheduled a game like a week out at one point. Like,
I mean,
like,
our game with
play somebody,
our game with Iowa State was scheduled 2 weeks in advance.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've never heard of that happening. Yeah, typically these schedules
are made four or five years in advance, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like we play Boise in like 2028 or something like that.
Shit,
like,
dude, I think we scheduled a game for 2030.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's always ridiculous.
We've got a long range of scheduling games.
Yeah. So let's kind of, I mean, we touched on it, but let's kind of jump into you guys, season last year. You know, obviously started off with the big upset against Iowa State. I remember us, you and I, going over that game in like pretty solid detail. I mean, I didn't want to take anything away from you guys, but what I took away from that game was how you guys obviously played really well. I could not have been less impressed with the way that Iowa State played in that game. Like, it was not a matter of like, you guys, on paper shouldn't have beat them because they were ranked and all that kind of stuff. However, the effort that Iowa State gave was, I'd have been embarrassed if I'd have been an Iowa State fan. Like, it wasn't even like one of those where it was like, well, you know, we gave it a good fight and it came down to the end and we lost by a field goal or whatever. It was just like, nothing. We couldn't do it. They couldn't do anything. Like, it was like you guys had them in a straitjacket. Like, it was weird to watch almost. I mean, maybe you can chalk that up to COVID, but they didn't have anybody out as far as I remember.
No, the only guys they had out were due to injury. But, you know, that first half, their offense was able to move the ball a little bit. You know, they got those two touchdowns. I think it was 14-0 at half, or 14-7 or something like that. And
14-10.
It was 14-10 at half. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you know, as a Cajuns fan, playing Iowa State on ESPN week one, if it's 14-10 at halftime, I'm sitting there going, hell yeah.
Yeah, that's a win.
We got them. Sure. We got them. Even if we end up losing this game, like just to be able to compete that way is fantastic. And then, you know, you get the long touchdown from Levi to Peter LeBlanc. You get the punt return for a touchdown. You get the kick return for a touchdown. And then, you know, there was about 7 minutes left in the game, and it's 31-17 or 31-14, which ended up being the final. And about that 7 minute mark was when it really sunk in that we were going to win the game. And by far the biggest win in school history to date.
Yeah. Yeah, it has to be.
And that's including beating Texas A&M in Lafayette in 1996.
Yeah. And this is kind of what I meant about, like, this is an example of that comment. That I said about Iowa State is like, as the season went along and I watched a little more Big 12 football, it seemed like to me that Brock Purdy was the player that every week I would hear about going into the game. All the announcers, look out for Brock Purdy, look out for him. And then it was like the game would come on and it was like, this is the guy that you guys have been talking about for 2 weeks. Like, I get it. They have that Breece Hall running back that they have is,
oh, Breece, very good. Breece is a machine. He's a machine.
He's very good. But then every week going in, I would be like, I'd hear about Brock Purdy. And then I'm like, I think that's the guy I just watched last week who wouldn't throw a ball more than 5 yards in the air against Iowa State. Like, so it was or against you guys. And I was like, that's who you guys are trying to pump up, like, on Fox.
But no, dude, people don't realize this because of the way Iowa State played week one. Breece Hall had 100 yards against us.
Oh yeah, no.
He ran for over 100 yards.
Every time I watched him, I was like, "This guy's the best player."
That was the one guy that might have been the quietest 100 yard performance I've ever seen.
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter when.
Well, right. When nobody else is doing anything for you. Right. It doesn't matter.
Down by 17 and trying to establish the run at 4.5 a clip. And it's like,
and you know, this isn't working. It's one of those things where right after you beat a team like Iowa State, you turn around and you look at your buddies and say, you know, we have to be Iowa State fans now.
Yeah,
because if they win out and like we're their only loss,
six loss season, right. you guys are right back where you started.
How good do we look, you know? Yeah. And like perfect scenario, we beat them at home last year by 17. They go on to compete in the Big 12 conference game. They're an outsider for the playoff and they win the freaking Fiesta Bowl. Mm-hmm. Like, how good did that make Louisiana look?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, they had a 9-3 season. I mean, it was, it couldn't have.
And 9-3 in the Big 12, especially with how talented the Big 12 was last year.
Yeah,
that's a good year.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And the Big 12, like, no one could establish any momentum. One week it was this team is up here, and the next week it's Oklahoma State's best team in the conference. Nope, they just got blown out by someone else. Then Oklahoma, no, they lost to Texas.
And then
lost to Texas. Now Texas can't get a win.
It's Texas like, Tech beat them. And, right, yeah. Right. Yeah, last year was absolutely wild, man.
So let's get into the schedule a little further. Obviously, that, you know, like you said, biggest win in school history. I totally agree. It was I couldn't believe it when it happened, to be totally honest. But I think it was because of how dominating it was. It's not just that you guys won. It was that after halftime, it was never it never felt close again.
Yeah.
So that's what took me most by surprise.
Oh, dude, that floored me.
Yeah, it would have done the same thing if I'd have been in your shoes.
We were confident that we could go and win, but we did not expect the way in which we did it.
Right.
Yeah, that was absolutely insane.
So getting a little further down the schedule, you guys played the Georgias, State and Southern the next 2 weeks. I remember State being a little bit of a letdown game for you guys. Oh, and they had a real shot to like come back and upset you guys. And
well, yeah, we went to overtime.
Yeah. I remember like even overtime, I was like, are they going to really do this 1 week after beating a ranked Iowa State team on national TV?
Yeah. We were missing again, not an excuse, but last year, this is going to be the story in every game. We were missing a lot of guys due to COVID. I think we were missing 21 total players. And
was this the game that you said that you guys were missing like a lot of your receiving core or no?
Yeah, we were missing two or three receivers.
Yeah.
So it kind of took away our passing game, to be honest.
Yeah.
And so we had to rely heavily on the run game, and you know our running backs had kind of gotten beaten up against Iowa State's defense. So we came out sluggish. Georgia State was really good. I mean, they were a quietly great team last year.
I think it was just speaks to their like inconsistency. That,
right.
Like, you had no idea what Georgia State team was going to show up.
Quad Brown. He before he graduates, he might be the best quarterback in the Sun Belt Conference.
Well, I think we talked about this last year. Isn't he going to end up having something like 6 years of eligibility when it's all said and done?
Yeah.
Because it was like they didn't count last year.
Right.
For a lot of players. And then we said something else. Something else was it came up and I can't remember. Oh, he was redshirted last year.
Right.
In 2018. So he's played four games.
So he's a redshirt true freshman.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll obviously talk about it more next week when we cover Coastal. But the fact that Grayson McCall is going to be a true freshman once again is scary.
Yeah.
God, that's scary. But yeah, you know, the back to the Georgia State game, I thought, you know, it was one of those, it was a perfect setup for a trap game. Coming off that high of beating Iowa State, playing a good Sun Belt Conference team on the road. It had all the mixings of a trap game. But that performance, especially in the fourth quarter and into overtime to win it, just shows the resilience that Louisiana had last year and the way that we were able to just, because we had to grind out a lot of our wins last year. Georgia State, Georgia Southern, especially the walk-off field goal. UAB was kind of a grind also. App State going down to that last second missed field goal. We had to grind out a lot of games last year. So that just shows you the resilience that our program had during the pandemic.
For sure. So you guys grind out a win against Georgia State. Like you said, you guys end up beating us, which with benefit of hindsight, that was in that loss, that was the best effort that Georgia
put
forth the whole season.
Y'all were great.
It was like the games that we won from there were games that we were supposed to win. We didn't upset anybody that we weren't supposed to beat. And then it was like the bowl game. I didn't know what the team that Louisiana Tech was going to bring. And then they ended up not having a quarterback who could like throw the ball. And so when it was all said and done, I looked back and I was like, you know, it's sad to say, but that Louisiana game was easily the most complete game we played all year.
Yeah. Shy was phenomenal. Y'all had great contributions from JD King and Wes Kennedy. That touchdown ball by Caleb Hood was phenomenal. Yeah. And you know, I don't ever want to disrespect any of our players, but with the performances field goal wise that Nate Snyder was putting up last year,
We talked about that.
When we trotted him out to kick that 53-yarder, I wanted to text you actually and be like, "Hey, great game, y'all got it, y'all won." No disrespect to Nate, but I mean, you know, history has a way of repeating itself.
I didn't know because I had. It was one of the previous two games. I can't remember whether it was Georgia State or Iowa State that you guys had played where y'all's kicker kicked a ball at one point that went in the corner of the stadium. Like it wasn't in the same zip code as the uprights. And I was like, if this is that same guy,
yep, it was.
I was like, I'm not super concerned. And then when he booted it, I was just sitting there watching it go, well, oh, and, there's no way.
And you know,
there's
one thing
cleared it.
one thing a lot of people didn't talk about. So Nate's a transfer from Indiana.
Yeah.
He never attempted a field goal at Indiana. He was their kickoff specialist. So coming into UL, the kid hadn't attempted a field goal since high school.
Yeah.
It had been like 3 years since he had kicked a field goal.
That's crazy.
I mean, regardless, whether you're a natural kicker or not, if you haven't kicked a field goal in 3 years, you're going to have some serious rust to knock off.
Yeah.
And at the time, as a fan, you're sitting there going, you have one job, dude, make the damn kick.
And the thing that a lot of people forget is like, you can't simulate a game situation of in practice. Like you just can't, because it's like there's so many variables and you don't want something to happen to one of your actual players.
A kid's going
to
get hurt.
Yeah.
No, you're like, a kid's going
to
get hurt.
We don't want our starting tight end to break his arm on a practice field goal that doesn't actually mean anything. Right. So it's like you try your best to go game speed, but you can't replicate like the pressure that's put on somebody and like the emotion that goes into it. So, you know, like you said, credit to him. It was a hell of a kick. I couldn't believe it when it happened. I just kept tracking it and I was like, it went through.
Yeah, he didn't buy a drink and laugh yet that night. I guarantee you that.
Oh, I guarantee it. So moving on from there, you know, you guys have the loss to Coastal by three. I mean, we touched on this, you know, pretty well when we talked about the two coastal games a little earlier. So I'm kind of going to skip over this because I'm sure this is going to be a recurring theme, you guys, in coastal or, you know, something along those lines throughout these previews. So I'm going to kind of go down the list of these games and you tell me if there are any that stand out that you would want to talk about. So after the coastal game, you guys beat UAB, Texas State, Arkansas State, South Alabama. You had a game against Central Arkansas get canceled. You play your rival UL Monroe, which I mean,
we demolished them.
It was a 50-point deficit.
So I actually had work that day, and I can remember I had pulled the game up on my phone, and I'd pulled it up late, and it was like 7-0, I think. And yeah, I kind of watched it for a little while. Next thing I know, it's 21-0. And I said, okay, you know, we're going to run away with this one. Let me put my phone down. So I put my phone down, got some work done. Maybe about an hour later, I turned the game back on. It's 42-0. And I said, oh, yeah, it's going to be one of those days.
Yeah.
And you know, it couldn't come against a better opponent because I don't know how to compare it. I really don't. Lafayette loathes Monroe.
Well, I mean, the relationship's kind of that of a hammer and a nail, right?
Oh, like, 100. We despise. Like I have said that there are 130 D1 athletic departments, right, in college football. I will work for 129 of them. The only school that I would turn down is ULM.
Yeah.
I mean, growing up my whole life, you hated in Lafayette, Louisiana, you hate the Dallas Cowboys and you hate ULM. Like that's it. And the Atlanta Falcons. You hate the Atlanta Falcons.
That's fair.
Those three teams are the plague. Mm-hmm. Plain and simple. So obviously beating somebody 70-20, it couldn't have been a better opponent other than ULM.
Yeah. So, you know, you went over this briefly, but you guys then beat App State in Boone 24-21. Like you said, your first win over App in school history. You know, the culmination of, you know, a really good season. Like, you know, it's like you lose to Coastal, but you know that you guys are the best team in the West. So you get whoever comes out of the East, and then you've got that rematch kind of in your back pocket. And then Coastal gets bit by the COVID bug a week later.
Allegedly.
You don't have a conference title game. So then you're quote unquote co-champions, which is
a load of crap. Like,
yeah. I mean, I actually really liked the idea of just making a bowl game Coastal versus Louisiana and having it be the de facto title game.
You see, I liked that idea, but then at the same time, I felt like it should have been a scenario, and I'm pretty sure you and I have talked about this. They should have set a rule in place last year that if a team caught COVID and was unable to play in the conference championship game, the next ranked team would play in their place. Mm-hmm. So in that situation, it'd have been us and App. Mm-hmm. Had we caught COVID, it would have been Coastal and Arkansas State, I think, finished second in the West.
Yeah.
So that would
be my default guess.
It'd have been Coastal and Arkansas State. I mean, yeah, that's an unfortunate scenario, but at the same time, you're the reason, quote unquote, that the title game can't be played.
Well,
you shouldn't rob the conference from a title game just because one coach caught COVID.
Well, it's so weird to not really have a conference champion. Like,
right.
You do, but it's also like we basically just picked the two best teams and asked them to split the title.
I will say this, though. I am glad that they didn't base it off of regular season performances. Because if they would have given Coastal the outright conference title just because they beat us by three.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's how the Sun Belt used to be before they got a title game. It was just like, if you finished, if two teams finished undefeated and they didn't play each other, then you were just co-champs. And I was like, you sure we can't just get one game in here, guys?
We can't play one more game?
Yeah. So then, like I said, it gets canceled. And then you guys go on to play Texas San Antonio, I believe it is, in the Serve Pro First Responder Bowl. And you guys win 31-24. And that pretty much puts a cap on you guys' 10-1 season. Conference co-champions, like we said. Now, coming into this year, let me start off by asking, because from my research, I've seen that a lot of things are staying the same with you guys. Absolutely. Outside of, I believe it's the running back position. Yeah.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What is changing for you guys this year?
We lost Elijah Mitchell and Trey Regis to the NFL draft. So we're going to have to replace one starter on offense. And then Joe Dillon, our defensive end from last year, graduated. So we're going to have to replace one starter on defense as well. But when you have 10 out of your 11 guys coming back on each side of the ball, I mean, that's ridiculous. The biggest thing that's going to change this year is our coaching staff. If I remember correctly, we've had to replace six coaches this offseason. Our offensive coordinator / O-line coach, Rob Sale, he's now the offensive line coach of the New York Giants. So obviously that was a huge thing. Our DB's coach, Lamar Morgan, is now the DB coach for Vanderbilt. I believe we had another coach go to Vanderbilt as well. So we had a lot of coaches to replace, but I think that we have brought in, you know, high quality replacements. We brought in a guy from Georgia, brought in a guy from Florida Atlantic, South Florida. So we've definitely done well with replenishing the staff. And, you know, I as cliche as this might be, I think it's going to be a reload year. And not so much of a rebuild in Lafayette.
Well, it's not even that much of a reload. Like you said, you guys aren't even losing that much talent like across the board. So, I mean, outside of coaching, which, I mean, I guess you have to put your faith in, you know, Coach Napier and be like, he's going to find guys that can fill the spots that other coaches have left. But I mean, you know, coming from someone who firsthand knows how much coaching means on one side of the ball or another, I mean, you guys are in a prime spot to kind of make that run again. And honestly, I think there's more pressure on a team like Coastal or App to respond and get back to that point than there is you guys. Like, I mean, I hate to say it, but the West is kind of...
No, it's so weak.
It's weak. So it's like you guys are probably going to steamroll through everyone. Arkansas State's the only team that really has any hope at all to do anything. So it's, you know, like
I host my own UL podcast, and the other day I had the pleasure of sitting down with Phil Steele, you know, the guy who kind of writes the college football Bible, if you will. And we were talking about our program and our schedule this year and all that, and he basically said it outright. The West is going to be no problem for you guys. Y'all are going to run right through it.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, unless you catch Arkansas State on a bad day and they're just throwing the ball all over the field, like
Arkansas State's the only team that can touch us.
I mean, I hate to say this because I don't actually think this is going to happen, but I really do feel like, I mean, you guys could be 8-4 and still win the West and go to the title game. I mean, it's
absolutely.
Like, because you're not going to lose games. I mean, like we said, Arkansas State, but then it's like Texas State, ULM, South Alabama. I mean, those aren't,
you're not losing.
You guys are going to lose those games. You're not losing. So it doesn't matter. Teams. Like, so it's almost a foregone conclusion at that point that you guys are going to be in the conference title game. And if the team from the East or whatever can't play you guys, I think they should just give you the trophy. I don't think they can pull that 2 years.
Right, right. Texas could very well be a loss. Liberty could very well be a loss. I could see us losing to either Southern or State. So right there, I think that's three losses.
So the Texas game was something that I wanted to talk about with you because I've already heard a lot of people who aren't even fans of Louisiana say Texas needs to be on the lookout for like upset watch because this is the exact same thing that happened to Iowa State last year. Now, I will say I do think you guys are catching Texas at the right time because if Sam Ellinger had decided to come back for another season, I think I would
I'd already write it a loss.
Yeah, you'd have to 100% in, but now it's like they're starting over at quarterback. They have Sarkisian coming in and no one knows what he's, I mean, people have an idea of what he's going to do because he's did it at Alabama, USC and everywhere else. But then it's like outside of that, I mean, this guy is starting from scratch, basically with a new team. They have no continuity at the most important position, which is quarterback. They don't have any continuity in the coaching. So I think there is a real chance for you guys to kind of run and upset them. Now, I do think Texas is going to be a little bit more on their heels because of the Iowa State game last year. Like, I don't think they're going to take you guys lightly at all. Now, if you guys just out muscle them and just beat them outright, like, yeah, I mean, there's nothing they can do.
Right,
but
right.
I don't think it's going to be one of those where Texas is like, oh, well, we came into this game thinking it was going to be a walkover and it wasn't.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. You know, I'll say this. I'm not a betting man in any way, but the line is currently sitting at Texas minus 10.
Pretty short for a power five.
I would bet the mortgage.
Blue blood football program against.
I would bet the mortgage on that one.
Yeah.
I would bet the mortgage on that one. Because I'm not saying in any way that we're definitely going to win. I think we've got a great shot to, like you said, you know, we're catching them at the right time with a new quarterback, new head coach, a whole lot of unknowns, but
yeah, it's a perfect setup with the amount of people that you guys have coming back.
Right.
Like, and versus their newness on everything.
But you know, even if we do end up losing, I think it's going to be by less than 10 points. Mm-hmm. So I would definitely take that minus 10.
And I think it all comes down to who they have playing quarterback and how that person plays.
It's got to be Casey Thompson, right?
I guess. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. Supposedly they have this freshman that's supposed to be the real deal.
Yeah, but I feel like I hear that all the time with Texas. And then it turns out to be like some guy who transfers to SMU a year later.
Right.
No, it's just a guy that ends up transferring to SMU like a year later. And I'm
Shane Bouchel.
I'm like, yeah, it's this Garrett Gilbert part 9.
Right.
Like, whatever. So, okay. So going through you guys' schedule, you kind of talked about it. Let's touch on some of the tougher games that you guys have outside of the Texas game. You play at Georgia Southern week 4.
Yep.
Okay, the only reason I'm not talking about the Ohio game that you guys have at home is because I don't know anything about Ohio. So I'm just like, I'm proceeding, I mean, as if that,
you know, man, they're a solid MAC team. We played them 2019. Mm-hmm. And we went up there and I think we beat them by 20. And I mean, they're a good team. I don't want to take anything away from them, but playing at home, primetime game, Thursday night, I don't see us losing.
No, and I mean, like I said, I'm going to level with you. I don't know anything about them. And I think that also speaks to their notoriety, yeah. I guess, nationally. Is like, I just have no concept of like what they are as a team. So I'm just going to skip right past that one.
Right.
So the conference openers week 4 at Georgia Southern, I think that is another one where you're catching us at a perfect time for you guys. We have a lot of uncertainty at quarterback coming in next year. So I don't my expectations are very tempered for next year's Georgia Southern team, to be totally honest. I'm not even trying to hedge by saying like, oh yeah, I'm just being humble. Like, I don't know. No, I literally, we could be 500.
I'll tell you this,
I don't know. Like, I have no idea what to expect.
Regardless of y'all's performance, just from a fan base alone, end of September, beginning of October, the hole is the last place I want to be. That's the last place I want to be.
Yeah.
God, I mean, that Paulson Stadium is a scary SOB.
And we obviously didn't have it last year because of COVID and everything and limited fan seating. But
I thought the way
a normal year when that place gets rocking, man.
I thought the way that Cajun Field was designed, with the field being below sea level and the fans just kind of caving in on it, was well designed. But God, Statesboro's got it going on. Especially like you said, when y'all have a crowd of you know, 20,000-25,000, end of September, beginning of October, that's the last place I want to be.
Mm-hmm. So I, like I said, my expectations are tempered. I don't really know what to expect out of this team. I think anytime with our offense that you're breaking in a new quarterback, you have to temper your expectations,
right?
unless you've miraculously get a player who's run the exact same system somewhere else or whatever. But like, I don't know. So I would pretty much pencil you guys in for a win unless we just show up the first 3 weeks and look amazing. Like I have a hard time picturing a world in which we turn over most of our offense and still are able to pull out a win. So the next premier game kind of on you guys' schedule, you got October 12th. This is a primetime game on ESPN2. You guys welcome App to Lafayette. You know, that's another team. It's kind of tough to place what they're going to be because, you know, they lose their quarterback and then they bring in that Clemson transfer, Chase Bryce, who I don't think has ever really taken meaningful snaps at Clemson because of Trevor Lawrence.
He didn't take meaningful snaps at Clemson, but he did play a full year at Duke last year.
Okay.
But
Duke wasn't that good, right?
I mean, they weren't great, but I mean, I think he threw for 2,500 yards.
I was a little baffled at the people who, and it wasn't even App fans, but it was just people who keep up with recruiting and transfers and all that kind of stuff being like, this is a huge get for App. And I'm like, is it? Like, it's not as if they pulled in like some extremely good transfer from like I said, he was a fine quarterback at Duke, but like he never played any meaningful snaps really at Clemson. So you didn't really get to see him with, you know, top flight talent around him. And he's not going to get that at App, not to the level of Clemson. So it's kind of weird to have to tell what they're going to look like next year. I mean, I have to imagine they run a similar scheme because their quarterbacks are similar enough. With going from, what was it, Lamb to was Lamb their quarterback last year?
No, Zach Thomas.
Zach Thomas. That was two quarterbacks ago.
Yes.
So from Zach Thomas to Chase Bryce, I have to imagine they're very conservative once again, want to run the ball, limit the amount of turnovers, play defense. That's what I have to imagine.
So Duke was 2-9 last year. Chase Bryce completed 55% of his passes for 2,200 yards, 10 touchdowns, and 15 interceptions.
And this is what I was hearing about, like, in the offseason, like, it was a coup for App to get this guy. And I'm like, I understand it, dude. You have very limited talent around you. I totally very get limited. That.
But, yeah, no, I mean.
But to be like, oh, boy, we stole one from a P5, I'm like, I don't know, man.
It's because of where he played before Clemson. I mean, before Duke.
But I'm like, he might not have had anywhere to go.
Right.
Like, who else was in the running? Yeah,
who else was digging for him, right? Yeah.
So that's going to be an interesting game, too. I mean, it all comes down to, we said this about Thomas last year. Are they going to, if the chips are down and it's late in the game, are they going to allow him to make a play, or are they just going to be like, no, let's keep throwing slants and hitches and all these really short stuff and then hope that like we break one?
Yeah. You know, that didn't
work last year.
That was the interesting thing with Sean Clark last year, with it being his first year as a head coach. But I think this year he's, you know, you got that 1 full-year of experience under your belt. You learned a lot of things last year. Personally, I think App State's going to win the East this year. I really do. I think Chase Bryce is going to be the real deal for App. I think his numbers at Duke can mainly be charted up to, you know, lack of talent and the fact that he's playing in the ACC. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to play Notre Dame, Clemson, Virginia Tech, Pitt. Those are conference games.
North Carolina.
Yeah, that's conference games.
Yep.
Like, that's a tough. That was all it was. That's a tough schedule. Last year.
Yeah. And last year, that was all they could do was play conference games.
So I think he's going to settle in and be a great quarterback for App. And yeah, I'm nervous about that App State game for many reasons.
You're going to be seeking revenge.
If you had to ask me right now what I thought about that game, I don't think we win it. I really don't. I don't think,
I don't know. Like I said, I'm a little skeptical about what they're going to get out of Chase Bryce.
We don't play well on home primetime games. We don't. We never have. I can maybe remember one that we've played well in.
I mean, you never know. Like I mean, I said,
Coastal last year, App State the year before that. You know, the list, we don't play well weeknight primetime games at home. It just doesn't happen. Okay. I think that this year is going to be more of the same, and App State finds a way to beat us.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I mean, like, you know, like we kind of said, when we started running down the schedule, it wouldn't be the end of the world for you guys because you're going to win the West, and whoever comes out of the East, whether it be App or Coastal or whoever else, you know, you guys are going to see them in the conference title game again.
Yeah. So even with a loss to App, your goals are still very much intact.
Yeah.
So
going past the App game, the next week you guys are at Arkansas State. I mean, this is the only real team you guys are going to play in the West. And it's right.
And we're still going to win.
I was impressed by Gunnar Watson last year. I think it all depends on what they surround him with. And if he has people to throw to, and
you mean
Lane Hatcher. Sorry.
Gunnar Watson's at Troy.
Troy.
Yeah. Sorry. All good. All good.
They're the same team to me.
Right. Basically
Lane Hatcher. Yeah. If they and Troy are so similar that I'm like, if either one of them played a smidge of defense, they would be so dangerous.
Yep.
But you just can't,
there's no defense. Right.
So that's another like what if. I mean, I don't know what to expect from Arkansas State. I mean, I have to go into the year assuming they're going to do the same thing they did last year, which is peaks and valleys, and they're going to score a ton of points, but they're also going to allow
be incredibly average. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're gonna score 45 a game, but they're going to give up 50. So I mean,
and they're going to beat one team probably in the Sun Belt they have no business beating, or at least take them down to the wire, and then they're going to lose to a team they have absolutely no business losing to.
ULM
or Georgia State or whatever. Right. You know, like one of those types of teams. So right. I think that Georgia State game that you guys have on November 4th is a very interesting game. It's on ESPN primetime, 7:30. Georgia State, you know, like we talked about, kept it really close with you guys last year, went to overtime. Quad Brown gets another year under his belt.
Destin Coates is back.
I mean, that's another team. This is the key with so many of these Sunbelt teams. If they could establish any level of consistency, these teams would be dangerous.
100%. Like
in contention for a conference, you know, berth, at least in the title game, if not winning the title. But Georgia State was another team last year. It was like 1 week you're allowing 50 points, and then the next week it's a blowout and you guys are walking away with it. So it's
right.
It's so hard. But then, yeah, so go from there at Troy. You guys face Liberty again. We'll see how that goes. That was an interesting game. But yeah, and then you close with ULM, which is, you know, you have to assume that's a dub. So it doesn't really matter at that point. So I guess we've gone over everything we need to go over. Give me one reason why you think you guys are walking away going to be the conference champions this year.
20 starters returning, including our quarterback. Our top 8 receivers from last year are all back. Our offensive line, crazy stat about our offensive line. Not only are they all coming back, over 140 career starts among our entire offensive line. Absolutely nuts. Again, 10 starters on our defense, including Braylon Trahan and Percy Butler, who both probably should have been All-Americans at the end of the year last year. Reese Burns, one of the best punters in the country. I mean, talent up and down our roster, talent up and down our coaching staff. A lot to play for after everything that happened with the conference championship last year. I mean, yeah, I think we have to be the favorite to win the Sun Belt Conference.
So I have a question. You may not know this off the top of your head. How much did the COVID year help you guys with returning players who would have otherwise left?
100%. I mean, if you look at the guys we have coming back, Levi Lewis would have been gone. Jalen Williams, one of our receivers, would have been gone. We would have lost 2 or 3 tight ends. We'd have lost one of our offensive linemen. We'd have lost 2 linebackers on defense. We'd have lost a safety. So yeah, dude, the extra year of COVID eligibility has been a godsend. And then, you know, with that, our future quarterback after Levi graduates, he's going to step in 2022 as a sophomore. Yeah. And it'll be his 4th year with the program.
It's crazy.
And he's going to be a sophomore.
It's crazy.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, this extra looking again, like I said earlier, hindsight's 2020, but looking back at the year that we've all had to endure, the COVID pandemic in terms of college football is going to be a blessing in disguise 5 years down the road.
So, I have 2 quick questions for you as we wrap this preview up. My first question is, give me one, or I guess it's not a question, it's more of just a challenge. Give me a reason why, or give me a reason or reasons why you guys might not win the conference this year.
Appalachian State. I'm sorry. I don't want to offend anybody in North Carolina. They don't like that. Appalachian State.
So you're not worried about Coastal at all?
No, I'm not. Like you said, they peaked last year entirely too early. I also, as talented as Grayson McCall is, as great of a coach as Jamie Chadwell is, CJ Brewer on their defense, I mean, they have talent up and down just like we do. However, I think App having a full year of head coaching experience for Sean Clark, getting a guy like Chase Bryce, bringing Cam Peoples back, getting their receivers, Thomas Hennigan, they had a kid sit out last year because of COVID. He's back. You know, you put all those ingredients together, man. I think App's going to have a slight advantage over Coastal. And since we don't play Coastal during the regular season, yeah, Coastal doesn't worry me.
Okay. So my last question, and this may be a tough one. This might not. I just kind of thought of this one on the fly. You guys are returning a bunch of starters from the COVID year with the extra year eligibility and all that good stuff. Would you trade that conference title last year for those guys coming back this year?
Absolutely not. And reason being is now this year with an extra year of those guys having another year of playing time, another year of experience, all that, I think we're the clear cut favorite to win the conference this year. And I think we're the clear cut favorite to be the G5 representative in the New Year 6.
Okay.
And I think that if you lose those guys last year, even if you win the conference championship last year, I don't know if you're in the same position going into this season. So yeah, I'll take a conference championship this year with those guys rather than winning it last year.
All right. No more questions, Your Honor.
Hey, I'm here all night, man. I am here all night. But yeah, no, dude, September 4th, Austin, Texas, 3:30 in the afternoon, prime time, whatever way you want to look at it, this game is going to be insane. It's the biggest game in school history, win or lose. Just the exposure that not only our athletic program, but our entire university, what we're going to receive from that game is going to, you know, you might not see it for 3 or 4 years, but you know, there might be a 12-year-old kid sitting on the couch with his dad in, you know, Arkansas, watches this game and goes, man, that looks, I want to go to that school. Mm-hmm. Attendance goes up, you know, stuff like you never know. So yeah. The things that you're going to receive from that game are going to be incredible. I was hoping to take the trip down to Austin. But I decided that an engagement party might be a better way to spend my Saturday night. So, you know,
well, you didn't want to spend the next month on the couch,
right? Right. I don't want to be in the doghouse. So, yeah, we'll have a big screen set up at the party. We'll have the game on. It'll be fine.
Nice.
It'll be fine.
Well, yeah. I mean, good luck to you guys, man. Like you said, you guys should be the overwhelming favorite, I think, for the Sun Belt title. But yeah, I mean, do you want to send us home?
Yeah, man. You know, next week we'll sit back down and we'll preview Coastal Carolina. We'll talk about their season last year, preview their year this year. The game plan, guys, is we're going to do the kind of the top five or so programs in the conference. We're going to go Louisiana Coastal, App, Georgia Southern, Georgia State. And then from there, Arkansas State and Troy are going to be in one episode. And then Texas State, South Alabama, and ULM are going to be in one episode. And that'll bring us right to kickoff on September 4th. So definitely a lot to look forward to. We're excited to bring it to you this year. And we hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Brian, appreciate you as always, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.